You're listening to My Favourite Elliott Smith Song. In this podcast, we try, in our own very small way, to keep Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favourite song of his. Hopefully, you're listening to this safe and well from wherever you are in the world. As I said before, we're not going to dwell too much on what's going on with coronavirus in these episodes, but if you are feeling lonely or just fancy a chat, then we're always available. You can email us at info@myfavoriteelliottsmithsong.com. Our guest today is the musician Joan Wasser, or Joan as Policewoman, to use her stage name. Joan started out playing in several bands, including the Dam Builders, Anthony and the Johnsons, and Those Bastard Souls. Since deciding to go it alone in the early 2000s, however, Joan has had a very successful solo career, releasing 5 regular studio albums, plus an EP and a couple of collections of covers as well. Joan's lived in New York City since the 90s, and it's there she got to know Elliott Smith, playing at the same shows and drinking in the same bars and clubs. She also toured with him for a brief period too. On her first solo record, there's even a song written in tribute to Elliott, called We Don't Own It, which Joan wrote after seeing parallels between the reaction to Elliott's death and the death of her partner, the musician Jeff Buckley. So in this chat, we talk about that track, we talk about touring with Elliott, and we also cover her favourite song choice too. So here's Joan talking to me from lockdown in New York.
Hello, I am Joan as Policewoman. My favorite Elliott Smith song is Wouldn't Mama Be Proud?
The question is, wouldn't mama be proud? There's a silver lining in the corporate cloud.
I mean, the fact is that I could choose almost any song of his and be fairly wowed by the listen, even when I've listened so much, because he is just the master of the concise pop song that just tears you apart. Perfect lyrics, perfect chord changes. Everybody tries to be the Beatles, but actually he does it well. You know, he writes new Beatles songs, except just with, better lyrics. you know, but he has those kind of classic chord movements that, you know, remind you of the Beatles and the Kinks and stuff. And a lot of people try to emulate that. And I just feel like he's like maybe the only person that I really love hearing do it, because he's so good at it.
And the pretty post that you're taking as an NCO. Of the great pretender, I should sure think so. Wouldn't mama be proud?
When doing some more research on the song, when I knew that you were going to talk about it, people online seem to say that they think it's his most straightforward song. Do you agree with that? And by straightforward, what do you think people might mean? What does that mean to you?
I have no idea. I can't comment on whether it's his most straightforward song. I hadn't thought about it in that way. I could see what people mean, because it's quite clear to me, at least, what he's talking about. I mean, he often just tears character apart using himself as a focus often, and you know, he does it here really quite clearly, where he's sort of talking about, he's just ripping himself apart about like traveling and the false luxury of being on a plane and being asked what you want, and you know, and ultimately he's going on tour, and he's saying everything's always about to just break apart, but you know, I'm trying to, like he says, transmit a moment from me to you.
Can I take you? Streak, blowing coast to coast.
And the refrain, "Wouldn't Mama Be Proud," is, I mean, it feels like both, maybe she would be proud, and then also just like really sarcastic. Wouldn't she be proud of me being an NCO of the Great Pretender, which is like one of the greatest lines of all time. So, you know, he's just, again, just saying like, what is genuine about what I'm doing? Which is then, of course, what's real is that he is so genuine, because he is putting it down in words in a song like this that's really poppy, that you might not actually even notice how deep the words are. I mean, that's what's great about a pop song, is that it feels good in your body and you move around and like sing along, and then you realize, oh shit, what am I singing actually? What is in this? What is the content of this? I don't know. What do you think? you do a podcast especially for Elliott Smith, so you must really, what's your take?
Oh no, I just asked the questions.
He always talked about like, I'm not rock star material, but yet he got to the point where he was getting flown around. I mean, it feels like he's in business class here, the long stem glasses, a movie, a pleasant dream, you know, he's getting catered to, I would say not in coach. I don't know. That's a guess, but you know, and so, I mean, I think he just feels confusion about like, I'm not rock star material, but like actually I am a bit of a rock star. And what does that mean to me? Would mama be proud? Like, am I proud? You know, I mean, I think when you ask questions like that, it's so much about like, you know, you're saying it's about mama, but really it's like about a question you're asking about yourself.
At this stage in his career, do you think that was a big concern for him, that he'd obviously achieved what he might have thought was success 5-10 years before? If he thought of being in that position, he would obviously have thought that was success. But was he questioning whether he had what he wanted?
I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, he says there's a silver lining in the corporate cloud. He was on DreamWorks at that point. And the fact is that it is more comfortable having money to tour and playing for large audiences, which I know also really suited him, because, I mean, to get that kind of adoration as an extremely shy, sort of reclusive person, you know, can also be wonderful. So I don't know if he thought he was successful or not. Like, I mean, I know for myself, I feel more confident than I did when I first started writing songs and putting out records. But once like a record is done, like I've sort of done nothing and I'm starting from the beginning, completely from the beginning again. And I think there's no way I can make another record. I'll never be able to do it. So I don't know what he was thinking, but I know as an artist, there is a tendency to never be satisfied, you know, and he was so prolific. I feel like there's a part of him that was always like, well, all right, you know, now I'm going to write the best song. Okay. Now I am, you know, like, I don't know though. I never talked to him about that. You know, I didn't know him very well.
So this was 2000. It's almost exactly 20 years ago when this album came out, just a little bit over 20 years. Did you know him at this time?
I mean, I would see him every once in a while, but I knew him. I mean, we knew each other from just being around New York City. So I lived in New York since 95 or 94 or something. And so we would see each other around at music, you know, shows and stuff. But then we went on tour together. I was so lucky to be on this tour because he was opening. This was before the whole, oh God, I can never remember those like bro-y dude movie that those, Good Will Hunting. It was before Good Will Hunting came out. So he had not yet been, you know, the mainstream had not yet heard, figured him out. We were on tour with, I was in a band called Those Bastard Souls, which was a band that Dave Shouse from the Grifters from Memphis put together. That was a really fun band. It included like Fred Armisen, drummer, who's now does Portlandia. It was Stephen Drozd from The Lips. It was a really fun band. We were opening for Sebado, and he was opening the whole show. So he was going first. And he would just, you know, blow every... I mean, I just watched him every night because he was so outrageous. I just couldn't believe what he was doing every night. He was just like going out there by himself and with an acoustic guitar and like so unassuming. And then just would proceed to just... destroy everyone if they were listening, because a lot of people didn't know who he was and were like drinking Bud Light at the back or whatever. But I think everybody that was on tour with him in the bands were pretty much floored on a nightly basis. So I did get to know him a little bit then, and I always really liked seeing him because he was incredibly kind, super sensitive, just. He was just a very like a soft, gentle person. And those people are wonderful to see. You know, I appreciate anyone that brings kindness to every situation.
Do you think he liked living in New York?
I mean, I have no idea. I can imagine he did just because New York is a place where... you could get anything. There's so much energy. There's so much music to see all the time. There's just so much happening here all the time. And you can also just isolate in a really special way, knowing that there's so much going on out there, but you know, you're safe in your tiny hovel and you're part of it and not part of it. You can do that here. Easily. Also at that time, like in the 90s, you know, it was just, it was just much, much more of a freak show here in New York. A lot of people started moving here, in the 2000s, and it just got more homogenous, you know? So, you know, in the 90s, it was just, it still retained and it still has it now, but it just was more, you know, it was like more freak show. And when I say freak show, this is like an endearing term. If anyone is wondering, you know, it's like, I am a freak. I appreciate the freaks to the nth power. So, yeah. If I send you postcards from the side of the road, photographs of moving,
you wrote a song about him called We Don't Own It. How did you kind of come to write that song? Why did you want to write a song about Elliot Smith, I suppose?
Well, in 97, I had lost my partner, Jeff Buckley. And that was, as you'd imagine, and still is, really incredibly traumatizing event in my life. And it's really only, I mean, I get more insight on it like every year, you know, because I wasn't really able to even I wasn't able to experience it in many ways. As I mean, I was 26. I was like so. I just like it was a boulder just hit me, and I was just stuck under it for a really, really long time. So when and I just watched, observed the insanity that went on around his death. Whether it have to do with his friends or his family or the media or just this crazy, like, really just difficult to watch, like sort of strange feeding frenzy situation. It was the record company, just the whole thing was, to put it mildly, disheartening. Okay. I mean, it was like really, it was really ugly in terms of humanity. Of course, there was so much beauty too that came out of it, but anyway, when then Elliot died, I watched from a distance it happen again, of course, in a slightly different way, but in similar ways, where everyone loses their mind. That's left, you know, everyone that's left loses their mind in various ways. And I had not been able, I wasn't writing songs when Jeff died, and I hadn't really been able to process what had gone on. But when I observed this happen with Elliot and the fallout, I wrote the song.
And were you wanting to bring that humanity to it? Because when I listen to your song and the lyrics, it's very, it isn't about the sort of the media circles or anything that goes around it. You know, you talk about, you understand that he's not going on and you're still going on. And it seems very real and also very moving.
Thank you. I mean, the whole thing was like everyone wanted to own his death, both of their deaths, you know. Everyone wanted to own it, have a piece of it. And the whole thing about death is like nobody owns that. No one can, like, no one has a part of that. No one. You know, you can have your own personal memories, but you know, once they're gone, and you can't take anything else. It's done. It is about my personal experience with him and seeing how he touched other people. And then the fact is like, none of us own any of that. We don't even own our experiences. Like we don't own anything really. And we certainly don't own someone's death. So light topics. Woohoo!
In your own music, do you have any Elliot Smith influences? Do you think about any of the things he does at any sort of level when you're creating your own music?
I haven't for a while, but I'm beginning of, you know, writing for a new record. So, you know, hearing this song, I'm gonna now go back because I just so appreciate his skill, and the simplicity. It's so hard to do. I don't know. I think if you're not a songwriter, you think, oh, that's really cool and simple. It's so hard to do. Simple and like catchy like that. I mean, it's like, it's what everyone's trying to do. That bands like, as I mentioned, the Beatles and the Kinks and, you know, did really, really well. But that's because they were geniuses at it, you know, as Elliot is. So, yeah, I mean, I'm certain I have. But now I'm definitely going to.
So thank you to Joan for taking part in the podcast. Speaking to her was a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoyed hearing it as well. Next up on the show, we've got a bit of a bonus for you. This one will be with the British actor Joe Gilgan. Joe played the character of Woody in the This Is England film and TV series, and his own show, Brassic, has just come back for a second series on Sky over here in the UK as well. The reason it's a bonus episode is just because Joe had so many different songs he wanted to pick, so we had a bit more of a general chat about those tracks and why he connects with Elliot's music so much. That one will be up in a week's time, and you can subscribe to the show to make sure you get it first, or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to stay up to date. Or why not even do both? Anyway, just one more thing from me before I go. We are taking listener picks for the episodes in this season. So please do send us a voice note if you want to be featured, telling us what your favourite Elliot Smith song is. You can send your choices to submissions@myfavouriteelliotsmithsong.com. So that's it for today. Thank you again to Jonas Policewoman. Thank you to Elizabeth Woodstanley for producing this podcast with me. And of course, thank you for listening to it. To play us out, here's podcast listener Stephen Johnson, who shares a favourite Elliot Smith song with our first ever guest, Louis Theroux. See you soon.
Hey, my name is Stephen Johnson, and my favorite Elliot Smith song is Independence Day. Elliot inspired me to start playing and eventually writing my own music, and to me, Independence Day is, on the one hand, one of the most Elliot-esque songs, but on the other hand, it also is kind of a departure for him, and I love that dichotomy, and it's always been my favorite song of his. Cheers.